This is the Rightscast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at rightscast.net. Writing, podcasting, platform building. What does any of it mean if, at the end of the day, we aren't happy doing it? Everyone struggles to find joy in the process at times, but if you're regularly struggling with the why of your artistic endeavors, perhaps it's time to push pause and find happy again. The good news? This episode's guest co-wrote a book called 10 Steps to Finding Happy, and over the course of our conversation, she's going to help us do just that. Hey there, I'm International Book Awards finalist and Rightscast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 96 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell Rightscast here on the Rightscast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. This episode's guest is Lindsay Wisner. Lindsay is a clinical psychologist in Long Island, New York, who received her doctorate from CW Post LIU and went on to pursue postdoctoral training at the American Institute of Psychoanalysis. She's the host of the Neurotic Nourishment podcast and is the co-author of the book 10 Steps to Finding Happy. I was thrilled Lindsay could join me for this episode, and after having tuned in, I'm sure you will be too. Stay tuned after our conversation for updates on what you can expect next from the Rightscast Network, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you so much, Lindsay Wisner, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell Rightscast here on the Rightscast Network.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like I sort of begged and wrote a beautiful, very long letter for why you should have me on your show.
It was a novel-esque email, I will say that. I opened it, however many months ago it was that you first reached out to me, I opened that email and I kind of sighed and I was like, oh goodness, what has happened here? I'm thinking it's someone who has a beef with something I said on my podcast, but no, it turned out that it was you who wanted to just take some time to talk about happiness. And why not talk about happiness? You know, this will be a good conversation.
Right. And I'm witty and sarcastic and funny and convincing, apparently.
Hey, and we're not going to be upset about those things, not today. So no. Why don't we get right into it then? We're going to be talking about 10 steps to finding happiness in the context of writing. And I think that's really important because in the world of writing, as you are familiar with, there can be such a focus on results in the form of things like publishing credits, and it can make it really easy to lose track of the importance of just being happy. So it's going to sound silly when I ask this, I think, but we'll do it anyway. Why, Lindsay, is happiness important, and why should we be keeping our happiness in mind?
So, it's funny. This question brought to mind two different things. One is, yes, I am the author of a self-help book. I also, I have a fiction agent and have never found a publisher for that. And that, of course, was the up and down, hellacious roller coaster that everyone can imagine it to be. And it's like, well, just when you think you've gotten somewhere, you're still waiting. But during the years of my sort of mourning and struggling, my very practical, very non-creative husband tried to explain to me that it was enough just to write the book that should bring me happiness. And I have to tell you, that's not what brings us happiness. Like, I know I can write a book. I've written a bunch of them. It's this fantasy of seeing someone on the subway, not during a pandemic, reading my book, knowing that people are reading or that what I'm saying makes a difference. I mean, I think you know that's where the pleasure is. But also, yesterday, I'm part of a ridiculous group of talented female writers. It's a Facebook group that you had to be vetted to get into, and they messed up and vetted me. Someone wrote, "How do I know if I'm depressed or I just don't feel like writing?" And I feel like that's a lot. Like, we're struggling with this, you know. It's our job to be creative in whatever way, and sometimes it feels like writing during this difficult time is for some, it's reliving the trauma and the, you know, of 2020. And then for others, it's freeing. And as a psychologist, my response was, it doesn't matter. It's a label, you know, like you feel the way you feel. But we do have to make conscious efforts to make ourselves happy and to make sure that our writing is still making us happy, because it is tough. On my own podcast, I've been interviewing a lot of comedians because they're very similar to psychologists in that we have to find, and writers in that we have to find some a way to laugh through the pain, you know. They're comedians that feel the same way. There's this darkness as we're trying to work on our craft, and especially for comedians, they're very limited in how they can get their words out there. So I think we're all struggling, and I still want my publishing credits, and I still get a kick out of writing something that resonates with people. I still fail at Twitter, sadly, but I'm working on it.
You know, and that's probably okay. Twitter is, you know, sometimes not contributing to our happiness for as much as we might like to try to convince ourselves that it is.
I don't know. I really want to I don't really want to go viral. I just want to have more than 4 people like something I write.
We had a whole conversation about that with Dan Blank back in, I think, what was episode 78, about this idea of virality and how if you do find yourself going viral and you're not prepared for it and what comes with it, how it can actually come at your detriment rather than as this sort of boon that we would have expected it to be. So that's another one of the great ironies of life, you know?
No, I don't. I've never gone viral.
Well, perhaps not personally. And I can say, too, I personally don't know that particular. I'm just thinking about it in this context of, you mentioned comedians, right? And there's that expression of tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Yes.
And there is this irony from the notion of, well, from tragedy comes this sort of inversion of, is that subversion of expectations, or it's about timing, or it's just about finding ways to look at the absurdity of what can be a sort of, I don't know, we'll go down that rabbit hole, a bit of a grueling existence, particularly in 2020, and finding ways to take happiness from that in the same way that we as writers have to look at our writing process, perhaps, and recognize that it is grueling and that we don't always get the success that we wanted, but we do have to find those happy bits within it.
100%, yeah.
Perfect, perfect. Well, and why don't we talk about it in the framework then of your book, the book that you have co-authored here, and that is, of course, 10 Steps to Finding Happy. I know that we won't have an opportunity to cover all 10 steps during our conversation.
Sure.
But why don't we start here by just having you list what those 10 steps are, and then we'll kind of pick a couple here and there and walk listeners through them.
Of course. And by the way, in retrospect, particularly since this book was released the first week of quarantine, I've long said I wish that we had called the book Finding Happier, particularly now, because I think finding happy has taken on new meaning. And of course, we had to choose March 18th as the release date. the 10 steps are, number one is choosing to find happy actively, positively, in a way that it engages you every day, and you have to work, and not just in a like, woe is me, I wish I were happier, moaning and groaning way. Step number 2 is seek out your happy place. Number 3 is find your happy people. Number 4 is accept people for who they are. And closely related to that is get rid of what you no longer need. And that's less a, you know, Marie Kondo-esque thing.
Tidying sort of situation, like a physical tidying, yeah.
Yeah, it's more of an emotional and then the people. You know, I'm sure for some people a clean house makes them happy. I am not one of those people, unless someone else cleans my house.
But to your point, and I will say that is step 5, right? It's this idea of ridding yourself of what you no longer need. And if we're talking about it in an emotional space, the ability to say no to things. And I will say to you, Lindsay, and I guess to my listeners, that number five in your process here, that is what my therapist and I are working on exclusively right now, is the ability to say no and get rid of the things, or sometimes, and I'm going to say this in a lower tone of voice, the people that we no longer need around us.
I would say the people in a louder tone of voice, because because honestly, how often do we keep people around or allow people to affect us, particularly family members, to affect us in a way that is not beneficial for us? I'm not a big fan of releasing family or getting rid of family, but I am a big fan of not letting them affect you in the way that they have in the past if it's no longer serving you.
Right. And that is something that I feel wholeheartedly. And as I said, I'm actively exploring in my own space right now. But that was step five. And we will spend some time kind of drilling more into that one a bit later. But why don't you pick up here with number six out of our 10 steps?
Of course. Find your passion. Find your purpose. This has never been more real to me than when I was running around like a crazy person trying to prepare for this big book launch party that, of course, didn't happen. But I was tracking down celebs, getting people to donate autographed books, autographed paraphernalia. And I really wanted to use the book release as a way to bring awareness to teen suicide and ending the stigma. And so I was sleeping like 3 hours a day, but I would have never been happier. And there were no illegal drugs involved either.
That's always a plus.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I should say that, because I think, you know, sometimes, I don't know. I've never been one for uppers, but I can imagine, you know, they make people happy. Otherwise, why would anyone do them? But yes, find your passion, find your purpose. Number seven, take active steps in pursuing your dreams. Definitely important to us writers. Number eight, celebrate your achievements, both big and small. Number nine, spread joy to others. Give something to others. This is sort of like an altruism. Be involved in contributing something to your community. If you look at studies on resilience and how we bounce back after bad things happen, one of the ways is by having ties to your community, and by having the power to give something, like to volunteer at a soup kitchen, or to donate donate used clothes or backpacks, or probably things we can't do right now, but there is something to be said about that. Giving joy to others. And then number 10 is practicing gratitude.
And practicing gratitude is one that listeners, I think, just had an opportunity to listen into a couple of episodes back with Hector Colon, who talked about his five virtues for life, leadership, and authorship. So listeners, if gratitude is one that you want to explore a little bit more, we've got a whole conversation practically about that a couple episodes back with Hector Colon. But with you here, Lindsay, I want to start by talking about that first step, because there is an active verb in step number one, and that surrounds this idea of choosing to find happy. So what is it that's behind that word choosing, and why do we have to choose to find happy?
So I think that, I feel the way about happiness similarly to the way I feel about love. And like, it's an active decision you have to make every day. If, no, not with my kids sometimes, but certainly when you're in a long-term relationship and over time, and there's always an easier route, and there's, the grass can always look greener, and no one is perfect, at least not that I've met. And so I believe that every day you have to make the choice to continue to love your spouse, your partner, whoever it is, and take active steps. And similarly, I think if we're unhappy, or even if we're just feeling meh, which is my favorite word, we have to choose, like actively pick something in our day, not just be disappointed when we're not happy or when we're falling into old habits. Like, doing something to make you happy should actually be on your to-do list. And what that is, it can be anything. You know, we list a thousand things, not an actual thousand, but a lot of things in the book, and that have been researched based to improve your happiness. I am a science geek, and so a lot of the research I like to turn to is neurotransmitters, you know, what goes on in your brain. In that first section, we list a bazillion, you know, ways you can do this. And one of my favorite is try something new. And like literally try something new, like take up crochet, try surfing. I am 43 years old and I'm starting my yoga teacher training Saturday and scared to death. But bucket list A, and B, when you, the same way your body develops muscle memory for certain things, I'm going to go with typing for us. I'm sure you, like I, don't look at the keyboard anymore when you type.
Well, can't even look at the screen anymore. I got to look somewhere else so I don't even see the words as they come out.
Same, although that sounds like a very painful problem, but yes, I hear you. I hear you. I too am tired of the screen, but I try to look at everything as a first draft, but maybe your way is better. So the way I always describe this is your, just like when we pave a new road or repave a road, and then you've got to deal with that smell of tar as a, a side effect for a few days. When you learn something new, your brain has to create new neural pathways. These are like roads. And in creating these new neural pathways, the accidental side effect is, instead of a yucky tar smell, it is the release of your happy hormones, which are technically neurotransmitters, but mine sounds cuter. But like dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, these things are released as, as sort of a byproduct. And that's what makes us happy. So trying something new is not just like, you know, oh, look on the bright side of the things. It's literally, this is how you can find a different way to naturally boost the neurotransmitters that make you happy.
November is here, which means National Novel Writing Month is upon us. And if you're participating in NaNoWriMo this year, or even if you're not, you know how hard it can be to keep that midnight oil burning long enough to make your day's word count goal. But with help from Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, you can keep yourself at the keys as long as their candles for the wordsmiths of the world burn at your side. Kill Your Darlings Candle Company endeavors to sustainably illuminate the lives of readers, writers, and their communities with candles like the spruce-infused Diverged in a Wood, the bold and dreamy Dramatic Irony, and their classic cherry and merlot-scented Kill Your Darlings Original Scent Blend. So, welcome the light of Kill Your Darlings Candle Company into your reading and writing regimen by visiting kydcandleco.com and checking out their full candle selection before choosing the reading and writing related organization you'd like them to donate to at checkout. Again, their site is kydcandleco.com. Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. Candles for the wordsmiths of the world. And there's certainly several things in what you've said there that stand out to me that I know I can personally relate to. You know, after doing that episode where I interviewed Dan Blank earlier this year, I decided to reach out to him and try to work with him in a one-on-one capacity to just kind of help get my head on straight with what it is that I was struggling with in the world of writing. And over the course of 4 weeks, a lot of really great things came out of going back and forth and talking out, you know, where my headspace was. And one of the things that came out of that was this idea of celebrating successes or celebrating something simple every week on, as you say, yep, that literal to-do list. And I now have every Friday an all-day event scheduled, and it just says celebrate with an exclamation point. And that doesn't mean that I have to go buy helium balloons. It doesn't mean I need to sit down and do a long affirmation. It doesn't mean that I need to really make sure that I give a big hug to what a great week it was, because sometimes it's not. But what What it does mean when I see that word celebrate is I spend a second and I just think about one good exchange I had with someone over the course of the week. Maybe it was by email. Maybe it was during a podcast conversation. Maybe it was just something simple like, well, I wrote, 2,000 words on Tuesday instead of 1,000 words. And I say, cool, that's good. I can feel happy about that. And that is just enough to help me realize, there are probably plenty of other things that went well this week, even if it feels like the world is, and technically is, literally on fire all around us, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I can't remember why I did this, but for some... because I have a lot of things that I do, and so it's confusing me at times. But I was doing research on gratitude, and the interesting... I'm doing a grief symposium in October. And so I was trying to put together like a PowerPoint presentation. And of course, gratitude is something that is helpful in moving forward. And also I was sort of expanding on the points that I highlight in the book. And so I started doing research and, scientific validated research has proved that, being grateful either to others or to yourself is more effect, like shows greater long-term improvement of and short-term improvement of mood than does I forgot what they call it, emotionally expressive writing, where you talk about your feelings and the positives and the negatives. In fact, that's less effective, which is a shame because that's kind of what therapy is. So I got to think about that one. But it's expressing gratitude, writing it down is actually more effective. And it makes no difference if you... if you're grateful for someone, if you send that to them, or if you just keep it for yourself, it's really just an internal acknowledgement of the fortunate things in your life or in your day or that you've accomplished or that others have done to you to make a difference.
And I'll say that aside from my quote unquote all day event that's on the calendar once a week that says celebrate, I also have one specifically set aside that's once a month for gratitude. And as fate would have it, tomorrow, in fact, being Friday for the celebrate day and the 25th of the month for my gratitude day, they happen to coincide. It's like the stars are aligning here. This is incredible stuff. It's like astrology is right in front of us right now.
Right. So. This is true, except most horoscopes and magazines are just written by two girls who couldn't get out of it.
Yeah, I'll be honest, and listeners, don't hate me for this. Astrology is not that's not where I hang out. I'm just enjoying it as a metaphor in this case. It's helping me feel.
Yeah, I go with like serendipity. Yeah, that's why I
serendipity.
Like
serendipity. We'll go with serendipity. And another thing that I wanted to speak to among what you said here about this idea of choosing to find happy relates to the idea of trying something new, because I know that for me. Personally, one of the things that I have been doing, and maybe not as often as I would have liked to, but for my birthday, I think last year, so almost a year ago by now, my wife got me this set of acrylic paints. And I had always expressed an interest in painting. I have for well over a decade now, probably close to 15 years, and I just never did it. But now I have paints. And you know what? There have been a couple of afternoons where I sat down and I painted and I did it just for me. There have been some times where I said, let's make this fun. I'm going to paint and do a live video on Facebook and people can watch me kind of figure out how to paint because I haven't watched any videos on it or taken any classes. And you know what? I ended up with a couple of paintings that are now, they're not the world's fanciest thing, but they are framed and they're up in my office and they serve as a reminder of, hey, it felt good to do this. You should probably get back to doing it more often because I found that even without any training, nothing like that. I started to understand how paints worked after a couple of sessions.
Sure.
And that knowledge and the ability to understand that there was learning going on just furthered my connection to it as something that I can just do kind of whenever and in a low stakes setting. And it spoke directly to some of what you touched on in your previous answer here.
Yeah, absolutely. Over the summer, I started teaching classes on Out School to kids about psychology. And I don't know why I did it other than simply running from all my feelings and, In preparing a lesson, I did a lot of research and a lot of learning. And like this, I've never taught before. I didn't think I'd ever have any interest in it, but good money, first of all. And second of all, you know, it was exciting to come up with a subject and then see, or a topic, and then see how I could break it down for kids. And then also interacting with kids all over the world was pretty cool. And so it was something I never thought I would enjoy, but I really did.
And had you not taken the, I guess we'll call it risk, or we can fall back on the idea of stepping outside your box, just be willing to try something new, you wouldn't have had an opportunity to find that happy because you hadn't chosen to embrace it, or at least embrace the opportunity of finding it. Right.
Exactly.
And of course, though, it's not just about choosing to be happy. There are 9 other steps. And one of them actually is about how place is just as important as people. So I'm thinking specifically here about number 2, which is seeking out your happy place, Lindsay. So why is it that place is just as important? Why does it get its own step? And what can we do to find our happy place?
Sure. I mean, I think that the reason, you know, place is environment. My happy place is my book nook. We bought a new house in November. And I swear to God, I'd say 90% of the reason we bought this house was because what the previous owner had used as like a place to put like a showy piano for like, it's like a weird level. And it's like, I don't know, it was definitely like mobster or white mansion or something. But there was this level and they had a piano and I immediately saw it and I was like, that's a book nook, you know? And so the first thing I did when we moved in was I alphabetized all my books. And then I hid the books that I'm embarrassed that my husband owns. I'm looking at you, Dean Koontz, but whatever. I alphabetized all mine and my kids got to decide how they wanted theirs. And my husband's went hidden in the bookshelves, like behind the doors. And we have made a point of going up there to read, to write. And it makes me very happy. I also like water, like a lot. And it turns out I like nature more than I thought, even hiking, which I would never have thought I would. And so, now, you know, during, either the pandemic or the denial of the pandemic or wherever you fall on the issue, it's not as easy to have the freedom to go to places that made us happy, but you can still decorate your home in a way that, you know, makes you happy. Like my book nook has all these like inspirational quotes that you buy online and then pray to magically tape them to the wall in a way that makes them work. But you have to have very delicate hands, but we did pretty well, you know, and so that's my happy place. And then we spend a lot of time outside. But you do have control of your environment, whether it be, I don't know, making a favorite, decorating your bathroom in a way that makes it feel unique and homey. I'm thinking of like bathtubs, which I'm also obsessed with, you know, or just finding a way to make the most of what you have and what you have access to right now. And I think that particularly has applied over the last 6 months and will probably apply in the future 6 months where, you know, I think our options may become more limited and it's more important to be able to find your place or make your place.
And I will say to those points, one thing actually that my wife has been doing as of late is she has been doing a lot of reading up on the idea of, and I hope I pronounce this right, but it's hygge, you know, that Danish idea of finding coziness or bringing coziness into one's home. She's read a couple of books on it. She attended a seminar that was put on by the University of Wisconsin's Department in Scandinavian Studies by a professor, I think one of the people who wrote one of the books that she read. And she's been going out of her way to start thinking about, well, what can we do for this winter where we will be here in Wisconsin, you know, trapped inside even more than normal, probably. Right. And how can we make sure that our home still feels like it has these places that we can feel whole within it. And even just this summer, there have been little things that I've tried to do to make my space feel more okay as I'm spending even more hours within, you know, the walls of my office. And that includes, hey, a friend of ours, they had a couch that they were getting rid of. It was a short little love seat and it was in good shape. Rather than have them, you know, put it on the curb, we said, we'll take it. Well, I threw it up in my office here. It's now in the corner. I didn't think I'd have room for it. I figured it would make the room really cramped. Actually, made it really cozy. Actually, that's where I do all of my reading now. Actually, if I need to recline with my laptop just to step away from my desk and feel like I'm not staring at my two monitors all day, it makes all the difference. And it's such a simple thing, but that is, to me, a case study in how big of a difference something like a change of place can make, even if it's in the same room.
I agree 100%. And it's important. And it's important. It's also a way to exert control over a world where we don't have a lot of control currently.
Yes. And that's something that I am thinking even more about as well. We're recording this in September. This episode will debut in November. Actually, this episode will debut on November 13th. So God knows what our world is going to look like about 10 days after a general election. So
it will not look good one way or the other. No.
Yeah, folks, it's going to be really important that we find moments of peace for ourselves when we can. And if a quick little change of place is going to help you capture that for even just a moment. It seems like, well, at least based on my experience and what Lindsay has to say here, it really could be something that makes all the difference for you, even if just fleetingly.
Yeah.
And another thing that I think we have to take into mind is that we look so often outward at the world and we think about what happiness is in terms of what we can add to our lives to welcome that happiness. But we talked about this a little bit earlier in the conversation. This is that step five, where we discuss ridding oneself of what's no longer needed and how that can actually lead to happiness as well. So let's touch on that again here. And maybe if you wouldn't mind, can you provide us with an example of this from your own life and then how it is that you determined what it was to get rid of in that case?
Sure. I've always had a rather conflictual volatile relationship with my mother. And for reasons that were largely encouraged in my youth that they should be kept secret. And now part of the beauty of growing up and also of having your own podcast is I think where it gave me the freedom to talk openly about things that I was not able to. And I have not rid myself of my mother, but I have rid myself of the guilt, the pressure, the obligations, the negatives that she places on me and the picture she paints of me. She's a complicated woman. The day I defended my dissertation, she fondly recalled the time that she got her doctorate in psychology, but chose to be a mother because that's what was important to her, which was clearly a slight. Also, she never got her doctorate in psychology, so go figure. But for a while, that was really tearing me apart, and it became my issue, not just hers. And I've sort of let that go. You know, similarly, I think we've become a very volatile, polarized nation. I'm thinking of Facebook in particular, all these neighborhood Facebook groups, which is like literally where you should only visit your local neighborhood Facebook group if you have a cocktail or two in you and want to laugh, but not too many that you want to fight. you know, it's just like a weird place. And I find a tough time arguing. Like, it's tough to argue with people. And so now I usually just say science and walk away. you know, but I think one of the things, I know a lot of people have stepped away from social media. And I don't agree with that because social media has really helped me find my happy people. Just because, you know, I'm in a small-ish suburban town and these women spend a lot of time baking bread and homemade meals and Pinterest-worthy stuff. And I didn't want to do that. So I just took pictures of food online and then sent it to them in the group. And that's my kind of thing. Cause I just, you know, but really there are these smart, you know, snarky, funny women, you know, accomplished and writers and more than that, that I've been able to connect with, you know, through Facebook and through Twitter and through Instagram. And these people are amazing. And I wouldn't have found them if not for social media. And I would still be feeling somewhat alone in my quirkiness. And it turns out there are more people that like Venn diagrams or feel as passionately about Venn diagrams as I do, because I really like Venn diagrams. So, you know, in order to rid yourself of something, I don't know. I know people that have blocked all of their Republican or Democrat family members, but that seems to me to be a bit extreme and all or none. And what I think we should be encouraging people to do is to stay away from that and instead to let go of the part of you that responds, you know, emotionally and abruptly.
This episode of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing. Dandelion Web Marketing helps writers like you thrive online. And if you need to get your writer's platform up and running fast, Dandelion Web Marketing's Author Quick Start packages are the place to start. These Author Quick Start packages take the headache out of creating your author website and blog, and they can help you with that all-important analytics tracking and more. So become your best you online today with Dandelion Web Marketing and visit dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers to learn more. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers. And I think that that really makes me think of, well, a couple of things, but I keep circling back to this phrase of, it's how you use it, right? Because in the context of writing on social media, there is this pressure to, I don't know, be in every Facebook group you can to ask questions of other writers. There's this idea that, well, you should sign up for as many newsletters as you can so you can, again, learn from other writers. But if you find that these Facebook groups, just because of the volume of notifications or the content within them, is looking eerily similar to the content of your neighborhood Facebook group, well, okay, it's just maybe in how we approach our approach, I guess, we're getting a little meta here, to participating in those groups. Or maybe if there is a newsletter that we are finding is no longer, I don't know, bringing us that happiness when we open it, well, we don't have to open every newsletter, or we just try to explore how we can frame that newsletter's arrival in our inbox a little bit differently to, I don't know, make ourselves find that happy again. And on the note of ridding ourselves of things that are no longer maybe bringing us happiness, or if we feel we can find happiness elsewhere, I'll say this, Lindsay, by the time this episode debuts, we'll be 1 week removed from my announcement that the final episode of Writescast Network programming will debut at the very end of 2020. And that's not that's not because I don't like it. That's not because I don't like the community. It's not because I'm not grateful for the people that I have met, but it's because what I'm realizing is that with the connections that I've made through this podcast, the people I have met online, there's already a really vibrant, wonderful community here. And the thing that brings me joy is speaking with them, not always just in this context, but also just as writers, by exchanging pages and by helping each other with queries and things like that, which I don't have as much time to do if I'm spending a lot of time podcasting and blogging and trying to do all the maintenance that comes with a podcast network. And I'll say, since I made the decision to wind the network down, which as of the time we're recording this, not public knowledge, but since I've had it as private knowledge, I've just found myself generally being more happy because it feels like I've taken control of something that felt bigger than me. And I'm now finding ways to kind of wind it down and build on something for the future that'll bring me more happiness in the long run, if that makes any sense.
It absolutely does. I can't imagine the struggle, or it wasn't a struggle at all and that made it easier. But, you know, I find it difficult to stop things that I start.
Yes. And it was, when you say whether it was a struggle or not, it was certainly the former. This is something that I had been tussling with, I think, since the beginning of 2020. I mean, even pre-pandemic and maybe a little bit at the end of 2019. But inertia, you know, it keeps you moving forward. You feel like you have a sense of obligation to others and to this community. And I do love podcasting. I mean, I love having the opportunity to set time aside here on a Thursday morning for the two of us to chat. We've never met before. We've just exchanged emails and we can have a productive conversation about any number of things. And that's so great. But at the same time, well, I know once we're off this call, I got to record some ads and then I got to record an intro and an outro. And then I got to put some posts together. I got to send files to my audio guy and the list goes on. And suddenly, well, that's not where the joy is. You know, it's just in having these conversations, which can still happen off air. You know what I mean? So just about reclaiming that space and focusing on what makes you happy as opposed to things that do not.
I agree. That's huge. I am still mostly at a point where I'm enjoying my podcast, but I also, I don't know. Mine has evolved, I guess. So, you know, the theme has evolved. And so, like I said, I wanted to start interviewing comedians because, oh, we thought things were bad in 2018. So, you know, I want to know what you guys have to say now. And so it's been super fun. And I'm a good stalker, as you can attest. And so I, you know, to me, there's power in being able to speak to people that I don't know, I really enjoy and wouldn't have met otherwise. So, so yeah, I'm impressed by your decision. And I think that's a great step to finding happiness for you.
Yes. Fingers crossed. I continue to feel that way. I'm sure there will be. It's kind of like when, for me anyway, after I finish writing a manuscript, there's like, okay, cool. That was awesome. I finished writing this draft. And then a couple days later, there's this awful sinking sensation that something is missing. And it's just this idea that, well, you need to let it sit for a while before you go back to it. And I just feel that I'll let go of the podcast. I'll feel really good. And then there'll be just a couple of weeks where I'm like, oh my goodness, what now? But
yeah, but you can always go back. That's
right.
The thing.
Exactly. And as we said, we can still have these kinds of conversations. It doesn't always have to be part of, you know, that capital P platform. It doesn't have to be about like finding ways to monetize your happiness. It's just about having that happiness. I mean, we're not going to be upset about the money if we stumble into it, of course, but if you're doing all this extra work and you feel like it's turning something that was a fun hobby into a hustle that you no longer have time for, well then, you know, what are we doing? We're overextending ourselves. And when I say we're, I mean, I'm overextending myself and here we are.
I don't know how else to live without overextending myself. So, but I do think, you know, it's true. I mean, you are the perfect example of get rid of what you no longer need. And, you know, that which doesn't serve you or doesn't, I'm not going to say that which doesn't bring you joy because I hate anything that everyone else likes. And so I'm sorry, Marie Kondo, I don't like it. I've never seen Hamilton. I don't like it. I don't want to like it. And, what else? Feng shui, I think. I don't like just out of no other thing than principle. And The Secret and vision boards. Okay, I've got a bunch of them. But, you know, I think that we have to constantly be aware of what we're doing just because and what we're doing because it makes us happy. And I think it's really amazing that that's what you did.
Well, thanks. I'm gonna stick to my guns on that one, though I will know that I've already been talking to my wife about starting a podcast with her that would be way more casual. It'd be way less frequent than once a week. Just, you know, trying to find that sweet spot of doing the things I enjoy and doing the things that, you know, and doing it at a pace that feels more reasonable. But we'll see. You know, no decisions have been made. We got to let it go first, you know?
Yeah, you got to see how that sounds because the most awkward podcasts are the ones where the husband and wife are arguing, but low-key arguing. So, yeah.
We do a pretty good job. The idea would be to have it be like a book club sort of thing. Yeah. So it would just be like, you know, a friendly space to talk books. We're both readers, you know, and who doesn't like to read? Well, a lot of people don't, but we're not interested in them anyway.
No, we're not. I've got a great book for you if you want to read it for your book club.
Oh, boy. What's the book you have for us, Lindsay?
It's called 10 Steps to Finding Happy.
10 Steps to Finding Happy. Who'd have thunk? That will be on my list. Actually, and I really do need to grab a copy of your book because I'm going to need it, as I'm sure many of our listeners are, especially as, like we said, the last 6 months have been tough. The next 6 months, let's see what we're going to get. So
we know what we're going to get. People are just in denial.
Ugh, God, I'm not ready for it. I need to take a break from the news. We still got some time in this podcast, right? Please tell me we don't have to end the call yet.
No, we don't have to end the call. Listen, I'm the other way. Like, I need news all the time, because I'm waiting for the numbers to go back up so everyone goes into their houses again. And I don't feel like a bad mom for keeping my kids home.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I am, and again, listeners, this is being recorded in September. I'm visiting 538 about 20 times a day and checking the election forecast. And every time I see that it was updated, you know, 11 minutes ago, I expect to go in there and see a major shift. But that's not how any of this works anymore. So I'm just like, I'm addicted to the idea of like hope, which is probably not a great place to find happy. And yet here I am with this idea that, well, if I'm not an informed citizen, then what does that mean? So I hear you on just like wanting to be involved with the news, but, you know, place in terms of place right now, it's like this podcast, you know, it's about finding happy. And yet here we are pivoting toward that, which has, that which can drain the happy from us, I guess.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, I'm obsessed with the numbers of the CDC, Johns Hopkins. I can give you 8,000 different places and reasons why none of these are actually effective numbers. And then my brain goes all crazy. But right before we started recording, I was in a PTA meeting too, technically. And one of the, like the head of the meeting was like, well, we're really praying that we get the supplies on time. And I was like, that's awesome. Thoughts and prayers are the best way to make a change.
I was just going to say thoughts and prayers in the middle of what you were saying. God bless those.
They're praying. And then even when the materials get here, apparently it's like IKEA style. And so then you got to magically put it all together. So.
Hey, well, I'll say I did get my new office chairs from IKEA, and this thing is sturdy and very comfortable. So I guess, you know, hashtag thoughts and prayers that when your items arrive, they are as just of good quality, even if they do require assembly.
Yeah, I'm not insulting IKEA. I moved to New York in 2001 and got like a, I don't even know what it is, but whatever it is, it's currently downstairs holding my television, you know, 20 years later. So, no shame on IKEA. I just mean building stuff, and we're building 500 stuff when they come in.
My goodness. Well, yeah, if I had to build 500 office chairs, that would not have been as ideal. But Lindsay, let's take a little pivot here, because I do want to make sure that we leave listeners with, you know, a sense of forward momentum that has them feeling like they can choose to find this happy and that it is there waiting to be found. We talked a little earlier about celebration, and we should also talk a little bit now about spreading joy in order to, you know, find happy. I know that was step number 9 here, was spread joy to others, give something to others. So let's just reaffirm why it's important we celebrate along the way to finding happy, and how is it that we can spread joy to others so that they can celebrate too?
Sure. You know, just getting back to social media, someone posted, a teacher friend posted an email that she had received from a parent. You know, just like, I know this is a hard time. I appreciate everything you've done. And like, you know, we're all rooting for you. And it meant a ton, you know, it meant a ton to her. Like, we all know someone who's, we're all going through something, but we all know someone who's going through something as well. And I think the idea of reaching out to others is just huge. You know, spend a few moments making someone else feel better. I don't think we're going to be doing the whole soup kitchen volunteering thing this year because COVID, but, you know, after I'm in New York and after Hurricane Sandy, the kids and I, baked brownies and then went to some of the neighborhoods that had been more impacted and gave them away. I don't know how many people ate them because it's weird, creepy strangers delivering brownies, but it was me showing the kids that you could make a difference and making someone else happy. There is no true altruism. Making someone else happy also makes you feel happier, and I think that's okay.
Yeah, and I will say too that there are ways that we can do this even within our small, you know, writing circles with just our friends who are, you know, in the trenches with us, so to speak. I just this morning on Discord, I've been working on a query letter for a fiction manuscript that I'm hoping to start putting out into the universe next year in 2021. And I don't know if there are other people in this group on Discord that are also in various stages of querying or trying to get letters ready. And I just threw it out there. I was like, hey, folks, if anyone's got a minute to take a look at my query letter, that'd be fantastic. I just a couple little spots I'm a little unsure about. And other people then felt comfortable to jump in and also ask for help. And we were all able to pop in, give little comments here and there. And guess what? We're all walking away from that with better queries than we started with. And yeah. I feel great having been invested enough in that community to get comfortable asking for help and then comfortable providing help when other people needed it themselves. And it's just that kind of exchange. It's a very simple thing. It doesn't need to be like you spend an hour on someone's manuscript or on their query. It's just give it a look, let them know what your impressions are. And if they take something away from that, that is fantastic. And you've done a small thing to spread joy today.
Right. And also to find your happy people.
Yes. And that's one of the amazing things that I am finding as I sort of pare down, you know, some more of the extraneous stuff that is associated with running this podcast network is, if I weren't doing that, I wouldn't be in that group on Discord. I wouldn't be meeting with them twice a month, once to do actual critiques and another time to just have a session where we discuss what we've found happiness in over the course of the last month, what one of our challenges are, and to help each other out along the way. I wouldn't have a chance to have joined another critique group. And these are the small communities where we can really find that happiness. It can be very focused, and then you can all walk away feeling good about it. Whereas in this podcast conversation here, I hope you and I both walk away from this one feeling pretty good. I know I will anyway. But then when it comes time then to do the editing and all that jazz, it's like, no, that's the time that I could be chatting again with my friends on Discord or joining another critique group or focusing on my actual writing. And so again, it's just, we see how all 10 steps here, they feed into each other and they complement each other as we would naturally expect them to do. And so embracing as many of them as we can will inevitably, one would hope, start building momentum toward checking off those that we maybe haven't had a chance to focus on yet.
Sure. Absolutely.
I will take that. I don't know. I'm finding this is happening more and more in the interviews I'm doing as we close down the RightsCast network, is I'm starting to see how all of this just, it feeds into itself. And it seems like, I don't know, it's kind of reassuring, I guess. I'm taking it as reassuring. But very good, Lindsay. Well, I appreciate you making the time today. I know that we have given out the title of this book that you have co-authored here a couple of times, but why don't you just remind listeners what that book is and then also let them know where it is they can find you and your work online.
Sure. Yes, the book is called 10 Steps to Finding Happy, a Permanent Guide. Guide to Permanent Happiness. Okay, let's take it day by day, apocalypse 2020. But you can find that on Amazon. It's also at Barnes & Noble's and probably everywhere. You can follow me. I'm on Instagram at PsychShrinkMom. I'm also on Twitter at Lindsay S. Callen, K-A-L-L-E-N. I realize I do not understand marketing, but that's okay because we learn as we go. And then you can also, I have a blog. I'm an expert blogger on Psychology Today. It's called The Venn Diagram Life because I'm a dork. And then lastly, you can find me on the Neurotic Nourishment podcast, which is available. We're all, you know, they're all available everywhere, but we all know it's just Spotify and iTunes. So there you go.
It is. A lot of ways to stay in touch with Lindsay here. And folks, be sure to grab a copy of 10 Steps to Finding Happy. Lindsay, I want to thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
I'm so glad I managed to make it on before it ended.
Yeah, right. You're sliding right in at the end here. I thought it was an appropriate way to do a little bit of a sign off. There's only about 5 more episodes left and we're talking about finding happiness. It just felt too appropriate.
Ooh, I love it. I'm flattered and honored and thrilled to have made it in.
That'll do it for my conversation with Lindsay Wisner. After having listened to this episode, I hope you're better equipped than ever to get back out there and find happy. Thanks to Lindsay for joining us for this episode, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could leave the RightsCast Network a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the RightsCast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. those of you who have already left us a rating and review, thank you. I'd also like to thank the RightsCast Network's patrons who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/rightscast. In exchange for their support, RightsCast Network patrons get access to great patron perks, including RightsCast swag like stickers, t-shirts, and mugs, discounts on my editing services, and entries in monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques performed by yours truly. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen and Angeline Boley today in supporting our programming directly at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. Any level of contribution will get you access to some of those fantastic patron perks, so become a supporter now by making your pledge at patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Leg Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit rightscast.net/sponsors. We're also grateful for audio support from Electronauts, Inc. To learn more about their audio production and maintenance services, visit electronautsinc.com. That's electronautsinc.com. Coming up next on the RightsCast Network is a conversation with fellow author and friend M.A. Hinkle, who longtime RightsCast Network listeners might remember from episode 7 about the ins and outs of the publishing process, among other topics. So stay tuned for my forthcoming conversation with her, which will debut on rightscast.net, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts on November 20th. In the meantime, you can say hello on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at RightsCast, or by searching for the RightsCast Network. And we're available by email at rightscast@gmail.com, and you can now call us at area code 608-284-8342 to leave a voicemail with questions for future guests or other matters you'd like us to address in our programming. Again, that number is 608-284-8342. To reach me personally, you can visit rrcampbellwrites.com or get in touch on Twitter, where I can be found as @IamRRCampbell. I love hearing from listeners of all backgrounds, so please don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at rightscast.net.